cronyism throughout. The attorney general, who is also a crony of Donald Trump's, has also attempted to obstruct the recount.
Yesterday we had John Boniface on, and he was commenting on the difference between how Bush dealt with the 2004 request for recount and what's happening today, that Bush's lawyers didn't even show up places, but Trump's lawyers are deeply involved at every level.
Exactly.
Why?
And I think it speaks volumes that Donald Trump is not confident in the outcome of this vote and is very worried. In Michigan, the difference turned out to be 10,000 votes. That's the margin of difference between Clinton and Trump. Yet there are 75,000 votes which are mysteriously blank, which should be hand recounted. That recount is essentially being blocked in the communities where it's most likely to make a difference. That is, in the communities of color, particularly around Detroit.
And in Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is an incredible bureaucratic mess with these 9,000 precincts, each of which have to be handled differently. In Pennsylvania, we'll be in court today, actually, pressing the case forward for a statewide recount. You know, at this point, we are pushing ahead, and we're building this movement, which is not going to be stopped by political cronyism and economic extortion. We deserve a right to vote, and we deserve the right to be confident in that vote, to have automatic recounts when it's close, to get rid of these fallible voting machines.
We will have to leave it there. Dr. Jill Stein, 2016 presidential nominee of the Green Party. And that does it for our show. If you'd like to see our 20th anniversary Democracy Now! Event at Riverside Church, you can go online to see the whole thing with Danny DeVito, Danny Glover, Harry Belafonte, Noam Chomsky, Juan Gonzalez, Jeremy Scahill, and many others also performing, as well Patti Smith and Tom Morello. DemocracyNow.org is the place to go. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual International Human Rights Day, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU building in Portland. International Human Rights Day is a day of solidarity and remembrance of people all over the world who continue to be oppressed by human rights violations. Those who are systematically marginalized, disappeared, imprisoned, and killed. This event features a report back from solidarity trips taken to the Philippines in the summer of 2016, cultural presentations, and more. Again, that's the third annual International Human Rights Day celebration, December 10th at 6 p.m. at the SEIU building, 6401 Southeast Foster Road in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is gearing up to celebrate 50 years of community radio, and we need your help. Take the Big Events Survey on kboo.fm and help us decide what kind of events you would attend or help build. Go to kboo.fm and click on the survey banner to help prepare for the Kaleidoscope of KBOO, Past, Present, and Future, 50th Anniversary Celebration.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the state of Washington has sued Monsanto over PCB contamination.
Employees of the Department of Energy are getting grilled by the Trump transition team.
KBOO News spoke to Romeo Sosa of Portland Voz about community action to address threats.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 9th, 2016. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Stacey Holtman. President-elect Donald Trump is expected to nominate Washington Republican Kathy McMorris Rodgers as Secretary of the Interior. McMorris Rodgers is chair of the House Republican Conference, which makes her the fourth highest ranking Republican in the House and the highest ranking GOP woman in Congress. Her nomination brought a swift and negative response from environmentalists and conservationists. Jean Karpinski, president of the League of Conservation Voters, called the selection, quote, a massive for sale sign on our public lands, end quote. Karpinski pointed out that McMorris Rodgers has an abysmal 4% lifetime score in the organization's National Environmental Scorecard. The Sierra Club also has come out strongly against the appointment, saying that McMorris Rodgers had often voted to open public lands to drilling, mining, and logging.
It's been reported that President-elect Donald Trump's transition team is requiring Department of Energy employees to complete a lengthy questionnaire on the agency's operation. The 74-question document asks detailed questions about employees and contractors and appears to be targeting officials who have helped implement Obama administration energy policies. The questionnaire asks employees to name DOE workers who attend any UN climate change conference within the last 5 years. It also asks about Energy Department's role in the Iran nuclear accord. At different times during the presidential campaign, Trump referred to the Iran deal as stupid, lopsided disgrace, and the worst deal ever negotiated. The survey also seeks a list of all political appointees and senior executives and asks workers to offer their opinions on who owns the department's clean energy mission and other policy goals. The questionnaire has raised concerns within the department that the Trump administration plans a witch hunt for civil servants who've simply been doing their jobs.
On Monday, December 12th, the Hollywood Theater will be having a special screening of the documentary Freedom to Marry. The documentary follows the final months of the legal and grassroots campaign. KBOO News reporter Annie O'Brien spoke with Thalia Zapatos, director of research and messaging for the organization Freedom to Marry.
I'm Romeo Sosa. I'm the executive director of VOS, Worker Rights Education Project. But also, we are part of the Poland Immigrant Rights Coalition.
What is going on at VOS right now to protect day laborers?
We have been doing a series of meetings with day laborers, what will be our defense. And so we create a lot of ideas, like to monitor the worker center, maybe.
What folks from here in Portland and Oregon may not realize is that Oregonians had a very important and interesting role in the national movement for freedom to marry. As you may know, there were 31 states that passed one man, one woman type anti-marriage amendments in the United States, including Oregon, back in 2004. And one of the reasons so many of those passed, of course, was just discrimination and stigmatized ideas about who LGBT people are. And Oregon actually was a sort of secret laboratory and testing state for messaging and research that completely changed the conversation around why same-sex couples wanted to get married. And in fact, the messaging developed here in Oregon eventually went all the way to the Supreme Court. The film really focuses on the final year of the marriage campaign, which was really preparing for the Obergefell case that went to the Supreme Court. But a very important part about winning those kind of court cases is building a supportive climate in the states. So there are some really interesting aspects of the film from Texas and from some of the other states in the South, where we were doing grassroots organizing, training people on how to have conversations with people they know and to talk about why marriage matters to same-sex couples. So you'll see some real examples of the state-level organizing, even while the case is building up to the Supreme Court's arguments.
And you sort of touched on it briefly, but is there anything else you want to talk about how significant this is for the sort of national moment we're in right now?
Well, I think a really interesting thing about the marriage campaign was finding ways and being very open to having conversations with people who didn't agree with us. And I know I myself have been challenged in thinking about that after the election of Donald Trump, really challenged to think about people in my own life who may have voted for Trump and how to have those conversations. But I do think there will be some interesting things presented in the film that just might help spur all of our thinking. I should also mention that Nancy Hawk from Basic Rights Oregon, which is the organization co-sponsoring the film, Nancy and I will be there for a Q&A after the screening. And we're definitely thinking about talking with everyone who comes about the political climate of today and are there useful lessons from the marriage campaign that we can take up and adapt to the political realities that we're facing now.
Is there anything else about the screening you'd like to include in this interview that we haven't touched on yet?
No, just that I think it will be a really positive story for anyone to hear. And if anyone needs a little boost, it might be worth coming on Monday at 7:30 to the Hollywood Theater on Northeast Sandy Boulevard.
Great. And where can people go to find out more information?
You can go to Queer Doc Fest. That's QUEERDOCFEST.org for tickets, or HollywoodTheater.org to get tickets online.
For the KBOO Evening News, this is Annie O'Brien.
President-elect Donald Trump has nominated CEO Andrew Puzder to be the administration's Secretary of Labor. Puzder is the CEO of CKE Restaurants, the company that owns fast food franchises Hardee's and Carl's Jr. He has been an outspoken critic of minimum wage increases, expanded eligibility of overtime pay, and paid sick leave. Puzder is a strong supporter of repealing the Affordable Care Act and restricting abortion rights. He decreased his involvement in the Missouri governor's anti-abortion task force after his wife accused him of domestic violence. Puzder echoes some of Trump's most inflammatory rhetoric. When questioned about some of his fast food restaurants' ads, he said it, quote, "I like our ads. I like beautiful women eating burgers and bikinis. I think it's very American," end quote. When talking about automation of jobs, he said that robots are, quote, "always polite, they always upsell, they never take a vacation, and they never show up late. There's never a slip and fall or an age, sex, or race discrimination case," end quote. Over the last 15 years, many Carl's Jr.'s and Hardee's restaurants have been under investigation by the Federal Labor Department for violations.
Since the election of Donald Trump, marginalized communities are turning to each other to figure out how to get through the next 4 years. One threat has been the possibility of rescinding DACA, which protects 740,000 Dreamers from deportation. Also of concern is the possibility of mass deportations. The recent appointment of Andrew Puzder to the Secretary of Labor brings up other labor concerns such as protection of minimum wage and labor conditions. VOS is a worker-led organization that empowers diverse day laborers and immigrants to improve their working conditions and protect civil rights through leadership development, organizing, education, and economic opportunity. Earlier today, I spoke with Romeo Sosa of Portland VOS to tell us about their work here in Portland.
I'm Romeo Sosa. I'm the executive director of VOS, Worker Rights Education Project, but also we are part of the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition.
What is going on at VOS right now to protect day laborers?
We have been doing a series of meetings with day laborers, what will be our defense. And so we create a lot of ideas, like to monitor the worker center. Maybe we can have cameras and just be ready to record or any hate crimes that can happen at the worker center. And also, we'll try to create a rapid response team that, in case of anti-immigrants, they come to the worker center. So we have a lot of allies are interested to help us, so, but we still developing like really more specific plans that we're going to have.
I see that there is an event happening tomorrow, December 10th, from 2 to 4 at Augustana Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland. It looks like it's a collaboration with Latino Network, Hispanic Metropolitan Chamber, VOS, Verde, Milagro, Hacienda, and the Portland Immigrants' Rights Coalition. Can you please tell us more about that?
Yeah, the Popular Assembly, it's basically we want the people who are affected by the issue and come up with their own plan in the neighborhood. And also establish a way of communication in the future, and we will come up with some ideas what we would like from the politician, what we would like from the ally group that they want to support us. And it's basically more like broad than just day laborers. It's like the large community who are affected by the threat and by the new administration's plan. It's open to everyone. The threat is not only Latinos. The threat is for including LGBTQ, women, Latinos, Black, even white community. So the threat is not only for us. It's not a Latino issue. It's broader than that.
Where can listeners find more information about the event?
They can find information in our Facebook page. It's under the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition.
Okay, great. Thanks, Romeo, for talking with KBOO today.
Thank you. All right. Goodbye.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather in Portland calls for a rainy and chilly day with temperatures hovering around 40 degrees. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you should expect a mix of rain and snow with temperatures in the low to mid-30s. On this day in 1990, Lech Walesa was elected as the first president of post-communist Poland. Walesa was the co-founder of the trade union Solidarity and won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1983. Fearing that he would not be allowed back into the country, Walesa did not accept the award personally. The quote of the day is from Lech Walesa, who said, quote, "He who puts out his hand to stop the wheel of history will have his fingers crushed," end quote.
Since April, protesters have been at Standing Rock, North Dakota, fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline. On Monday, the Army Corps of Engineers denied a permit for the construction of a key section of the Dakota Access Pipeline, granting a major victory to the protesters and water protectors. However, not everyone sees this as a major victory. The water protectors want the pipeline out completely. On Monday, KBOO reporter Sarika Mehta spoke with Sarah Young Bear Brown, a deaf Meskwaki woman from the Tama settlement in Tama, Iowa. This interview was originally conducted in American Sign Language, and Charlotte Davison provided voiceover. During the Thanksgiving break, Sarah went to Standing Rock to support the indigenous communities fighting to protect their water.
Yes, it was a good experience. Truly great. Really inspiring. I'll never forget it because I saw the vast number of people congregating to support those who are protecting our water. And, I mean, we are protecting this water for our future children, for their grandchildren. We cherish water because it's essential. It's a part of our body. It's 70% of our body is made of water. It's absolutely essential. We don't want our children drinking oil. No, we won't allow it. We won. It's not going to happen. Absolutely not.
As a deaf Native American woman, did you face any unique challenges or experiences at Standing Rock?
From what I saw in media, it was a terrible place, and then I saw for myself that it wasn't. In reality, it was completely different. People were so nice, friendly, and helpful to each other. They were willing to risk their lives to protect the water. It was incredible. I mean, people would go that far to protect our land, our water. I am amazed at the number of things people did to protect our land out of love. It was really incredible.
2,000 veterans poured into Standing Rock to join the protests and offer support to the water protectors. Sarah describes her visit to Turtle Hill.
I did go to Turtle Hill where the activists and the police were stationed. So I went there to see for myself. I mean, the cops put up barbed wire on this land. It's a sickening feeling to see that. And I saw that and wondered, how could they do that? They put up barbed wire? It made it look like a prison, especially because the wire encompassed the hill and the water. I mean, it's stupid. Oh, but 2 days ago when the veterans arrived, all those veterans came pouring in and they came to stand with us. And they did take the wire down from the wall. I was so happy to hear that helped the water protectors. I don't have the words to describe. They were a big help. We needed them to protect us too.
On Monday, the Army Corps of Engineers denied easement of the Dakota Access Pipeline. That is, the pipeline will be rerouted. While this is seen as a major victory in the press, Sarah felt differently.
Sure. I was so happy to hear this news. We won. And yes, I'm happy to know that they are rerouting the pipeline. But remember, Donald Trump will take office, and he supports big oil. It won't be good. I have to admit that I fear for the future. Donald won't support a stop to big oil. However, my hope is that someone will stop them. I really hope that. We want to keep protecting our land no matter what happens. Even if something bad happens, we will keep protecting it no matter what. But I'm scared for our future. From what I see from these pictures, people say, hold on. Yes, we won. However, we are still fighting. Still.
And so the protest carries on.
Yes. As the water protectors say, we will stay at camp until they're gone. Out. Done. And then they will leave. Some people are living there already, and some people have been living there since April. They've been there, and some people will stay there and live there. I don't know. I have a lot of mixed feelings about this. I just wish we could kill the black snake now. Do you know why we refer to this as the black snake? Once upon a time, there was a man who had a vision. He said he saw a huge black snake engulfing the land. And to this day, we now understand the vision. It's the oil pipeline. So they're called the black snake. I just want to let people know that we will keep fighting for our land, actually protecting, not fighting, protecting our water. We will keep going, and we need all of the support, and we need your prayers. Now, going through the winter will be tougher now, continuing to live in the camp in the tough winter. So we need all of the help and support that we can get. Do not stop.
For KBOO News, I'm Sarika Mehta.
Yesterday, we reported that radiation from the 2011 disaster at the Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan had been detected on Oregon's coast. Samples taken last winter from the Tillamook Bay in the north and Gold Beach in the south were tested by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and showed low levels of radiation from Fukushima. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to talk to Ken Buesler, a senior scientist at Woods Hole.
We've been looking at radioactivity in the ocean, in my case, for over 30 years now, dating back from the earliest weapons testing, Chernobyl, and 5.5 years ago, Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactors in Japan. What we've seen are very small numbers on this side of the Pacific compared to, of course, 5.5 years ago near Japan. The levels now are more than a million times lower than what they were at their peak in Japan. So while they're detectable and they're unique isotopes of cesium, radioactive forms of cesium that could only come from Fukushima Daiichi, the amount in the ocean is very small.
So that would certainly suggest that it's not a threat to human populations on the West Coast. What about the animal or plant life in the...
Yeah, that's a good question. You really have to be at those levels, 100,000 to a million times higher, you know, if you're talking about fish themselves for their reproductive effects, mortality, we'd have to be much, much higher. What people are more concerned about generally are the health effects of ingesting fish. You know, if we take that radioactive contaminant and ingest it, that can have an impact on us. And the limits for fish are, again, much higher than we're seeing here. Indeed, there were periods up until pretty recently when they had to close down fisheries off Japan, but not, I don't expect that on our side of the Pacific.
Ken, what kind of radiation does cesium release?
It's mostly a beta emitter. There's also gamma emissions with that. So different forms and radioactive forms of cesium, you know, and you think about plutonium, strontium, have different characteristics, so they have different health effects. Cesium is fortunately one of, in some ways, more benign because, like salt, it goes through the fish and our systems quite quickly. So a fish swimming across would be losing cesium along the way. I do want to convey, you know, I'm not brushing aside concerns. I do think we should be monitoring for these radionuclides in the ocean and fish. That's why I do this. We've had to rely, though, on citizen scientists and crowdfunding to get this done because, you know, at these low levels, governments and people who are in charge of regulating it will tell you there aren't health effects. But if you don't measure, then how would we know that? So a lot of this is done for scientific interest and to get some baseline data for what is out there and how quickly. Another interesting science question, how quickly do the ocean currents carry these things across the Pacific? We do want to continue to follow this. You know, until the levels start to go back down, we won't know whether we're at the peak. So our radioactive ocean would lead people to a website where they could propose sampling at their beach and potentially get their friends together, and we would send them kits to do that.
You mentioned a website, Ken, and I want to make sure I got that correctly. You had radioactive oceans?
Yeah, if you take the three words, our radioactive ocean, and put them together, .org is the website where they can get more information or propose sampling their beach. We'd like to continue this, despite these low levels, just to monitor when it goes back down again.
For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
Washington State has sued Monsanto over the harm caused by toxic chemicals released to the environment. The chemicals in question are PCBs. They accumulate in plants, fish, and animals and cause long-term health effects in humans. The lawsuit claims that Monsanto knew that its chemicals could cause cancer, immune system problems, and reproductive issues in people and animals, but said nothing. Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson both agree that Monsanto needs to take responsibility. Washington has spent millions to clean up rivers, trying to help salmon and orca whales to thrive in spite of their exposure to PCBs. Monsanto says their product is safe and hasn't been proven to cause such harm. Several other cities, including Portland, Oakland, San Jose, and San Diego, have also sued Monsanto over PCB pollution. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Stacy Holtman, Annie O'Brien, and Nicole. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Jenna Yokoyama. Our engineer is Ian Gadbury. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Stacy.
And I'm Ray. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7 o'clock, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. They welcome community activist Cameron Witten to the studio and take your calls. At 9, social and political commentary with the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, it's Chris Andre. She hosts Air Cascadia, headline interviews and commentary. At 10:15, it's Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein, your weekly interview show about our place on the planet. At 11, Eat Fat and Get Thin on Health Watch. We'll talk with Dr. Mark Hyman about his new book, Debunking Our Culture's Fat Phobia. At 11:30, Radio Zine presents Resistance and Resilience. 50 years after the birth of the Black Panther Party, we take a look back at the lasting cultural legacy of the Panthers through the eyes of the generations that followed. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Good night, Stacy. Have a good weekend.
Good night, Ray.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Donald Trump says he never thought he made that promise to keep more than